I think Donald just criticized me for preparing for this debate. And yes, I did. And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president. And I think that's a good thing.
When I got involved, I didn't fail. I got him to give the birth certificate. So I'm satisfied with it. And I'll tell you why I'm satisfied with it.
That was
because I want to get on to defeating ISIS. Because I want to get on to creating jobs. Because I want to get on to having a strong border.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not?
Why not?
We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago, you do stop and frisk, which worked very well. Mayor Giuliani is here. It worked very well in New York. It brought the crime rate way down.
I do want to follow up. Stop and frisk was ruled unconstitutional in New York because it largely singled out black and Hispanic young men.
No, you're wrong.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday. It is the 27th of September, 2016, 5:10 in the morning. It is the day after the debate. It's also another business day, another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to it. If you live anywhere in the Midwest, boy, doesn't it feel nice outside if you've already been outside this morning. It feels finally like autumn. 50s today in Chicago is what we have right now. Love this weather. It is definitely autumn, definitely political season, too. You can tell we're in the home stretch as the weather begins to change, the mood begins to change, people begin arguing with you about politics. It is something that we're going to be talking in depth about on today's show. First, we're going to get some debate analysis from, as James Carville might say, somebody who doesn't have a dog in this hunt. From Purdue University, we'll talk to a debate expert about last night's debate. And later in the broadcast, we'll see how the markets are reacting to what they saw last night and has Wall Street picked a candidate. But first, at the WGN market desk this morning, here are the numbers from around the globe. First, in Asia, markets are generally higher this morning. The Nikkei leading the way, followed by the Hang Seng, both up almost a full percent this morning. In Europe, most of the indices are lower again, following more concern about the future of the European economy. This, again, following a survey yesterday. I don't know if we had the time to mention this yesterday. I can't remember, but it made big news yesterday that a survey of British CEOs has found that almost three quarters of them have either considered or are considering moving their companies out of the United Kingdom after the Brexit vote. That's huge. It's caused a lot of concern in Europe, the economy there, too. Oil is also a big driver today. We're watching here in this country, Dow futures up about 22 points. The S&P is up. NASDAQ futures are higher as well. Crude oil is down almost a full percent this morning at 45.40 a barrel. So we'll keep a close watch on that. There is some big news that developing overnight since you went to bed. Probably the U.S. Justice Department has filed a lawsuit, a discrimination lawsuit, against the Silicon Valley software company that has Peter Thiel at the helm of it. Palantir Technologies, co-founded by Thiel, with the backing from an investment arm of the CIA. The lawsuit claims the company routinely eliminated Asian job candidates during the resume screening and telephone interview stages of the process. A very serious lawsuit has been filed by the Justice Department in that case. The day ahead, the Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller 20 City Home Price Index for July at 9 o'clock this morning. Yesterday, we saw home sales down, new home sales down generally all across the board except on the West Coast, almost 8% lower, according to the Commerce Department. Well, the big debate last night, did you watch? Were you tuned in? Let's take you to Purdue University this morning. And joining us is a debate expert on this. Josh Scacco is with us. He is with the Brian Lamb School of Communication, specializes in political communication. Josh, good morning. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Steve, for having me on this morning.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. And as I said in the beginning, and I want to just make sure our listeners know this, you don't really have a dog in this hunt. You're an expert who's going to look at this sort of in an unbiased way, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so did they communicate well last night, first off?
You know, I think you have to look at a 90-minute debate as various stages in terms of breaking it down into chunks of about 10 to 15 minutes and seeing which candidate got the better of the other in each portion of it. And I would say at different portions of it, you know, both candidates either did better than the other or were draw or, you know, kind of fell flat.
So you don't really kind of grade this as a whole event and there's not really a winner or loser?
Yeah, for me, it's not so much about the horse race. It's more about thinking of, you know, the various segments of the debate where one candidate is better than the other. Overall, I think on the night, you know, a number of the Insta polls and that kind of stuff said Hillary Clinton did better. However, what I will say is that, you know, voters don't necessarily tune in for the whole 90 minutes of the debate. They might tune in for the first 30 minutes. And in those first 30 minutes, Donald Trump actually did very well, talking about trade and a number of other economic-related matters.
How did you think the moderator did? I've been seeing a lot on social media today that they thought Lester Holt could have done a better job controlling the situation.
You know, if there were times where Lester Holt just disappeared from the entire fray, and I think that was, at first, you know, Lester trying to get an idea of, you know, what the dynamic would be between the two candidates. Once he realized that there was going to be a lot of sparks that were flying, he realized that he had to step in. And that's what you saw, particularly with a number of the fact checks that he ended up doing later on in the debate, particularly with Donald Trump.
We're going to get into more of this. We're on with Josh Scacco this morning. He's with the Brian Lamb School of Communication. He's talking with us about the presidential debates last night. He's at Purdue University.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks fell for a second straight day on Monday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 166 points to 18,094. The Standard & Poor's 500 fell 19 points. The NASDAQ Composite dropped 48. Overseas markets are mostly higher this morning. After surging 13.5% in July, new home sales fell 7.5% last month to 609,000 units. Even with the August decline, sales of new homes are up more than 20% from a year ago. A federal appeals court says American Express did not violate antitrust laws by barring merchants from asking customers to use one credit card over another. American Express had argued its policies kept it competitive against large payment networks of Visa and MasterCard. And a former technician for Verizon Wireless in Alabama is accused of selling customers' confidential information for more than 4 years to an unnamed private investigator. The police say he used company computers to obtain private calling records and phone locations. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 521. We're taking apart last night's debate with a debate expert from Brian Lamb School of Communication at Purdue University. Josh Scacco is with us this morning. Josh, I want to talk a little bit about just the tone of this. I'm seeing a lot on social media that they saw a lot of substance from Hillary and not a lot of substance from Donald in terms of answering questions. Is that a fair assessment from social media, or is it skewed?
I think that's probably a fair assessment in general, not only for the debate, but over the course of the entire campaign. And there were expectations going into last night that Hillary Clinton would provide a lot more of the substantive statistics and evidence, and Donald Trump would stick to broader themes. In fact, in debate prep before, according to news accounts, Donald Trump's team was encouraging him to stick to broad themes. In that way, you know, voters might be able to latch on to more of his candidacy based on some broad ideals that he was talking about. So I think that's a fairly fair assessment.
There was a lot of discussion, too, before, during, and now after the debate about all the fact-checking that was going on. Some news organizations did a pretty good job of it. Lester Holt tried to do some of it. The candidates tried to do a little bit of it. How much of that do you think was taken away from actual substantive discussion of the issues because they were fact-checking each other?
Well, one of the things that, you know, is important about this is that the facts are part of the substance. So the fact-checking is important to understanding whether or not, you know, candidates are really trying to fairly represent the issues that they're talking about. And in this particular instance, Lester Holt's role, as well as the role played by a number of other news outlets, NPR and others, that's part of what journalists do. Is they are the final arbiters of what is considered truth or not in a lot of ways. Otherwise, if they're not doing that, you might as well have, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio up there moderating the debate.
Yeah. The other part of this, too, I thought from a business standpoint was a little bit, I don't think I've seen it before. We had a major corporation in this country who was tweeting and using social media during this debate to correct Donald Trump on issues about jobs. And this particularly was Ford. The folks at Ford were live tweeting and saying, no, Mr. Trump, you have it wrong. We're not moving jobs out of the country. Have you ever seen that before in a debate?
No, that's really a first time that I've seen something where you have where a major player in the business world fact-check. But again, when brands are at stake here, and you have Donald Trump calling out, you know, an American brand by all intents and purposes, they had to respond and do a fact-check. The same thing happened a week or so ago when Donald Trump's son tweeted a picture of Skittles to talk about the Syrian refugee crisis. It prompted an official response from Skittles as well. And so you're seeing this in a lot of ways, that when the official brand of a company is called into question, they have to respond and fact check in their own way as well.
Yeah, and the issue with Ford was, you know, he keeps saying they're moving jobs out of the U.S., and Ford kept hitting back saying, no, we're not. We have an agreement with the UAW to keep these jobs here. We're moving some production but not jobs out of the country. The other part of this, too, was social media. And, again, I'm going to use CNN. I don't normally use them as a source, but they're reporting this morning that based on what they saw last night, it was the most tweeted debate ever. Social media played a big role in this, didn't it?
Social media does play an important role in this. One of the other things that's key here in understanding this is that while, you know, folks on Twitter and Facebook and doing other types of social media were watching the debate, there are also millions of Americans who weren't doing what we call, you know, in academic research, a second screening or third screening, where they were just watching television. And so, you know, the reactions of those on social media are very important, but also the reactions of those who are not on social media is also very important.
I was actually trying something different last night because I'm generally either radio or television person, television generally for debates, but I was doing following the Twitter feed. They were having a live stream of it. They had it above the rolling comments of things, and it was interesting to see that sort of unfold. Is that the way forward, do you think, with debates and political discussion that we're going to be having in the future?
I think that news media outlets are trying in any way to audiences around what's going on with these types of big political events, but also, you know, if someone is just online and on Twitter and following the debate that way, you know, that does become an important medium for shaping perceptions of what's going on, including candidate reactions, but also those types of moments that someone like me might not recognize. Part of the reason why I don't necessarily want to game the race for people, because people will interpret it through whatever lens they bring to it, whatever experience they want to bring to the debate. And I think in that way, social media becomes very important.
So let me ask you the big money question, and that is, did either candidate say or do anything or appear any way that will sway voters in a big way, as we've seen in past debates? Did you see any glaring problems?
Well, the initial kind of perceptions were, if you look, for example, at the betting markets in terms of where investors are betting, the betting markets moved generally in the direction of Hillary Clinton in terms of her likelihood of winning the presidency during the course of the debate. Now, long term, how long will these types of effects take hold, as well as are investors and those types of individuals different from, you know, the average individual out there? But I would argue that debates in general historically do little to sway voters, because by this point you still have about 90% of Republicans and 90% of Democrats locked in. In a polarized country like we are in right now, there's a very small percentage of that middle block of undecided voters that are really truly persuadable and can be swayed at this point. So there might be a small effect of this debate, depending on who those voters see as, winning this particular debate. But overall, the effect should be rather small.
Brian Lamb, School of Communication, Purdue University. Josh Scacco is an assistant professor there. Josh, very good of you to get up with us this morning, and we look forward to staying with you through the season. Maybe we can check in with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Steve.
All right, thank you. Again, Josh Scacco, Brian Lamb School of Communication over at Purdue University. You can follow Josh on Twitter at Josh Scacco, S-C-A-C-C-O. and the Lamb School at Lamb School.
From ABC News Tech Trends, UPS is testing something new.
Yeah, way to go, guys.
Massachusetts-based aerospace company Sci-Fi Works is conducting its first test flight, delivering a package for UPS. Helen Grainer is the Sci-Fi CEO.
This is the first drone delivery done by a major delivery company in partnership with Sci-Fi Works.
The scenario for this flight? A girl camping on nearby Children's Island urgently needs her asthma medication.
So she called UPS, and the most efficient way to get the medication here was by drone.
The process is 100% automated. The drone did an automatic launch and an automatic flight guided by GPS. It then executed an automatic landing operation. UPS official John Dodaro was impressed with what he's seen.
It's demonstrating that we can deliver a package in very hard-to-reach areas. This technology will continue to be tested and monitored, and we'll be ready when it's ready.
With Tech Trends, I'm Mona Rivera, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:38 on this Tuesday morning here on The Opening Bell. We've been discussing last night's presidential debate, the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. You heard a little bit of analysis from a communications expert. Let's see how the Wall Street is reacting, how the markets around the world are reacting. First, to the world markets this morning. They wasted no time in reacting to this, as Trump and Hillary were actually still debating last night. One key financial barometer of the Republican nominee's prospects started moving sharply. The Mexican peso soared more than 2% against the dollar. Global stock markets also rallied. Questions about what they were seeing. Did they like that, what they were seeing, or did they not like that, what they were seeing? Did they not appreciate what both candidates were saying? Let's get a little bit of analysis on that this morning. John Jamison is an expert in this. He's the author of Wealth Without Stocks or Mutual Funds. He's got about 25 years experience with finance. You've probably seen him on CNBC, other places as well. John, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mentioned there how some of the markets were reacting. Generally, markets are not going drastically one way or the other, but they have made it known in recent days how they feel, and I mean they, just sort of the collective group of all of them. First, let me get your analysis. Did anything happen last night that would move the markets or will move the markets when Wall Street opens later this morning?
You know, I don't believe so, Steve. I think the anticipation for last night was, you know, it obviously had that Super Bowl event. And I think that people saw what they wanted to see. I've seen all kinds of analysis from people who thought Hillary won the debate. And I see all kinds of analysis that Trump won the debate. So I think people see what they want to see. And I think business overall, you know, when you look at their tax plans, a lot of the businesses are looking at, hey, if I could have a 15% corporate tax instead of a 40% corporate tax, then you know, that's better for me. So I think what you saw last night was a little bit of relief that neither one of them, you know, Hillary didn't fall off the stage and Donald Trump didn't go crazy and come unglued. And so I think you're just seeing a little bit of relief to realize that, hey, no matter who wins this election, you know, I think we'll be just fine.
We talked a little bit in the last segment to our Purdue expert about how Ford took a really active role in the debate last night, correcting Donald Trump, and something we've not seen before. Do other corporations have a stake in this election, as Ford apparently does?
Yeah, I think so, especially the ones that have moved a lot of their jobs overseas. And Ford has done that. Ford's been doing that for years. They had major operations in South America for, you know, generations now. And I think if you're part of that, the businesses that are going to be overseas and do a lot of business overseas, I'm not sure you're in a big hurry for Donald Trump to hold you to task to say, if you are going to leave and you're going to sell your products back here, you know, you're going to pay a tariff like everybody else would. I think those, the corporations like Ford and other big conglomerates, they would prefer, I think, Hillary Clinton victory, because, you know, she says now that she's going to do something about tariffs and some, but, you know, I think that's only because she started seeing the polls move and she had to change her tune on that. But in reality, I don't think Ford thinks she's going to do much about it if she gets in.
The other part of this is recently CEOs, many of the major CEOs in the country were surveyed about how they feel about the current campaigns, who they favor. And it has been strongly in Hillary Clinton's corner, but that is sort of sliding the other direction in recent weeks. What are you seeing and hearing?
Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing. I know for the longest time it's been Hillary Clinton, because again, I think they favor her. She's not going to mess with the trade deals, even though she says that she is. I think they really favor that. And so for them, now they're starting to switch a little bit, because I think for the longest time, Steve, people didn't think Donald Trump could win. You know, if you believe all the mainstream media, you know, he was down by 10, 15 points, and it was kind of a joke. And next thing you know, not only is he even, he's ahead in a lot of the swing states. And a lot of the most recent polling, he's ahead in the general election as well. So I think now they're having to change their tune, because they're looking at the fact that it actually could be a different reality from what they were anticipating.
And, you know, we do a lot of talking here on the radio, on television. There are a lot of people who get winded to doing business and other news. People have their own opinions that they insert into stuff. The fact of the matter is, everybody keeps saying, well, no, that would never happen. That would never happen. And I think we can look at Great Britain to say, no, it could happen, because everybody was saying they'll never vote to leave Brexit. People who are saying Donald Trump will never be elected president, that's probably a little, I wouldn't go on that thin ice, would you?
No, I wouldn't at all. But I think you're right. I think you draw an excellent analogy between Brexit and Donald Trump. And even last night, the debate, what you saw was Hillary, you know, she's a very polished politician. She's been around a long time, and I think she did a nice job. But by the same token, Donald Trump is not a polished politician. And in a normal year, you'd think she would have a huge advantage. But this is the year of, hey, I don't think I want a polished politician. I think the polished politicians have gotten us where we are, to $20 trillion in debt and our economy not growing. I think we need someone who tells it like it is, who's blunt, who might offend some people. But that's what we need to bring in, someone who's going to shake it up. So I had that thought last night when I was watching just the two different styles.
I have had a lot of discussions and almost arguments with people about why we keep, as journalists, asking to see Donald Trump's tax returns, why this is a big issue. Somebody who's in the business community, can you maybe help us get a little further explanation on that? Explain to people why this is important. It was brought up during the debate last night about his financial interests, what he might be, who he might be beholden to. Why is this important?
Well, it's important for a couple of things. I mean, obviously, if you show someone income taxes, it gives you what their actual net income is. It tells you who they're donating to charity, or, you know, how much they're giving. Are they as generous as they say they are? Did he bring in as much money as he said he did? And, of course, the big one in politics is, did he pay any income taxes? And, you know, the way that Trump's life is structured, he takes accelerated depreciation on a lot of things. So he probably, and he's flat out says, hey, I pay as little tax as I possibly can. So I think the income tax thing, he's used, you know, to his credit, he used it well last night. And he basically said, hey, against my attorney's advice, I will release my taxes. But I want you at the same time to come up with those 33,000 emails that got deleted. So I really think he, which of course we know is not going to happen. So I think he did a nice job by kind of spinning that around. But, you know, also there's two factors, and Trump is right to say that, hey, I released a 100-page financial form that shows how much I owe, what my assets are worth, where they're located. And he offered last night to say, if you want a list of banks, I'm happy to provide that for you. So it's definitely a talking point. However, for the last, you know, to be fair, for the last 40 years, most presidential candidates do release their tax returns. But he's decided that, hey, until this audit's up, I'm not going to do it.
And we all know that that's not actually accurate. The IRS has said that he can. There's nothing forbidding him from releasing them. And it's sort of, you know, on, if you want to talk about it fairly, he needs to be on even ground with her in terms of releasing those tax returns. Then they can argue about emails, because every candidate, like you said, for the last 40 years has done that very basic thing of releasing those tax returns. He hasn't done that yet, but he's done it. You're right. He's doing a really good job making it like it's her problem and spinning it back to her and those emails.
Well, I'll tell you what one thing I would take exception with is I would not, the IRS is the one doing the auditing. So I certainly would not go to them and get their advice. So yeah, there's nothing prohibiting them from releasing them. They're the ones doing the auditing. So if you talk to, you know, tax professionals time and time again, they're like, I don't know, but I would not tell my client to release anything until that audit is up. So I don't know, as the person getting audited, I'm not sure if I'm going to get advice from the IRS, but the rest of the points is very well taken.
Yeah, and we don't even really know if he's being audited.
No, my guess is, you're right, there's nothing that says that, but my guess is if he wasn't, you know, this man has a lot of people crawling down his throat. I have to believe that that would have come out by now, but, you know, who knows?
Well, so where do we go from here? Are you positive about the markets ahead? Do you think they'll be opening in positive territory today, or do you think they even care?
No, I think they care. I think everyone's looking. You know, I think they're going to be lackluster for the next until the election has a little bit more decision on which way people think it's going. I think you're going to see a little lackluster. So you know, we'll have to see. I know the other markets that you mentioned were fine. I'm sure we'll do fine today.
John Jamison, an expert in business economics. His book, Wealth Without Stocks or Mutual Funds, you can watch him on CNBC, Business Daily, Investors Business Daily, other places as well. Good to have you on, John. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Steve. Have a good day.
You too.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the program. Dow futures pointing up just a bit this morning, up about 28 points on the WGN market desk. The S&P, NASDAQ futures higher as well. Crude oil, though, still trading lower, almost off a percent and a half now, down almost 63 cents, $45.30 per barrel. Let's get the latest on commodities and markets now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look at the opening trade for the week yesterday, we saw soybean prices firming after the market closed in the overnight trade. Reason for that, the weekly harvest progress report yesterday said corn harvest 15% complete, soybean harvest 10% complete. They were expecting a 17% complete figure for corn and an 11% harvested number for the soybeans. But the heavy showers in recent days, waterlogged fields in parts of northern Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, rivers flooded in parts of Iowa, forcing corn and soy processors to shut down in Cedar Rapids, while at least three locks on the Mississippi River were expected to close. But in the overnight trade, after the lower trade yesterday, a little bit of a recovery. Yesterday, no recovery in the livestock markets at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And after hitting some higher prices in the past week, live cattle futures closed lower yesterday, pressured by technical selling and last Friday's drop in cash cattle prices. So for the day yesterday, we saw the October live cattle contract end 72 cents lower per hundredweight, September feeder cattle down 92 cents per hundredweight, and the October lean hog contract down 97 cents a hundredweight, ending a nickel over $53. That's the report. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, you have a great day as well. We have a couple of other stories that we want to just mention to you this morning that we are following. The first involves Walgreens. Yesterday, the former chairman and CEO of Walgreens Corporation, Charles Walgreen III, died. He was 81 years old, led the company, a Chicago-based company, for many, many years. Also yesterday, we saw McDonald's launch something new on their website. It is with their chief chef at McDonald's, something that's going to appear on their website on a weekly basis, talking a little bit about how they do things. It's called What's Cooking in America? Here's a little bit of it.
McDonald's Egg McMuffin was invented right here in Santa Barbara, California.
This is a way for them to connect directly with consumers. It'll appear again on their YouTube page on a weekly basis. This one is how to make an Egg McMuffin, and they kind of walk you through it. It's a little bit of the chef talking about how things are just not thrown on the grill there, at least according to them. That's appearing on McDonald's. McDonald's stock, by the way, is a little bit higher this morning. They yesterday launched their Happy Meal. They're testing this in Tulsa with the McGriddle, Happy Meal with McGriddles in Tulsa.